Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online too, kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. Coming up on today's program, look at some headlines out there from the news cycle today. Also, a few events that are pretty interesting from this day in history. We'll look at what's coming up on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show and what's on thetrumpet.com. And also a great book, Character in Crisis. We're going to be talking about that. Very relevant for our time now. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. I wasn't quite ready to come on the air there. I still had a little throat clearing to do. caught me off guard. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with you here today. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. And emails you'd like to send, please send those in to comments at kpcg.fm. Tonight is the, it's good. Be the end of the World Series if the Houston Astros win. And they've been really exciting games. The ratings have been really high. People have really enjoyed them. So many home runs. And so there's controversy out there. Some players think the balls are juiced. And I get that they mean like they'll travel further. But technically, do you know what that means, to have a ball be juiced?
I actually don't know how that works. I know there's a lot of ways you can doctor a baseball. As a pitcher, you can put certain spins on it that are impossible unless you apply a substance to it. I think there's ways to like humidify a ball or maybe dehumidify it, whichever one is more effective for hitting the ball farther. I don't really know.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. But I saw a news story on it last night, and one of the home runs actually hit like a fireworks display, and it blew up when it hit it. And so, because they were talking about it, and they said the ball exploded on impact. I thought, wow, that must have been a hard hit, but it looked like it hit an explosive device. You know, sometimes they'll have I guess it's like fireworks around the edge of the stadium. Mm-hmm. So when they hit a home run, they can shoot them off. But one of the balls hit that and it blew up. So anyway, if you're a baseball fan, probably been enjoying that. And they've been getting some good ratings there. So that's good for baseball. And I think that... I haven't seen any too much of a big deal about protesting in the baseball games, and that's refreshing to just play the game without all the political stuff.
Exactly, and actually the really embarrassing part is that foreign players are even standing with their hands over their hearts. I mean, that really should be teaching a lot of Americans a lesson in just gratitude, especially what a lot of those guys go through. They're from Central American, South American, Caribbean countries that are hundreds of times poorer than what we have here. And they know the sacrifices it took to get here, and they realize how blessed they are to have made it here and achieved the American dream.
That's a really good point. Yeah, their lives are really different from what they would be otherwise. Sports is really interesting. There's been problems, of course, with the National Football League, and one of the problems has just been the realization, I guess, that there's a lot of injuries that occur. I don't think that's ever been a mystery, but now... As a fan, people are getting more of an inside look maybe at some of the injuries that are happening on the football field. And sometimes just really bizarre and catastrophic injuries. This happened here over the weekend. This is from the Bleacher Report. Zach Miller, he's a tight end for the Chicago Bears. He underwent urgent vascular surgery to save his leg. He had a leg injury, which is always bad. And you figure like, well... You know, they hurt their knee, maybe they won't play again or they'll have problems, but he could actually lose his leg. It says Chicago Bears tight end Zach Miller underwent urgent surgery to repair artery damage in his knee after suffering a dislocation in Sunday's loss to the New Orleans Saints. He caught a touchdown on the play, by the way, and then they said he didn't catch it.
That was the worst part of it. It seemed like he caught the ball, landed on the ground, and then realized his leg was horribly impaired, and so he let go of the ball to grab his leg, and they said the touchdown didn't count anymore.
Give the guy the touchdown. That's ridiculous. But anyway, and I'm not even a Bears fan.
The Bears, not at all.
No, I'm not. The Bears confirmed, they say, the procedure in a statement Monday, adding the surgery was successful. Miller will remain in the hospital for evaluation, so hopefully it won't be the worst case scenario. He's 33 years old, suffered a gruesome knee injury in the third quarter when attempting to make a touchdown reception. The dislocation of his knee was apparent on the field, and he needed an extended period of medical attention before being carted off the field. I guess from what I understand, the reason this one was more serious than most was that with the dislocation of it, not only did it cut or you know, tear tendons and so forth, but also an artery in his leg, and that's where you get the chance of potentially losing a leg.
Yeah, it did sound horrible. I purposely avoided looking it up when I heard about it. I know there's always a small minority of people who hear it and then they gravitate toward it for some reason. I can't imagine how, because, yeah. I mean, if you just think for a second of like going through something like that, I mean, you literally can almost feel the pain when you see someone suffer that way.
Yeah, I think most of us are hardwired to not want to see that, you know, like you just naturally know, oh, that body part shouldn't go that direction.
Well, like with the Gordon Hayward injury where he broke his lower leg and his left foot was 90 degrees to the left.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even mean to see that, and they snuck it into the highlight video I was watching, and sure enough, they were playing it on all the sports shows too, which I thought they'd be a lot more sensitive about just showing that to people who the vast majority would not want to see it at all. It was just extremely gruesome, and I just can't imagine that many people would actually want to see it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more than normal. Maybe it's not, but it just seems like recently in the realm of professional sports, injuries are like catastrophic and sort of out of nowhere in a way. You know, I mean, sometimes people get in a really awkward position and something happens, but like with the Gordon Hayward, it was minimal contact. The play he probably made 1,000 times in his career, and all of a sudden his leg breaks in half. And then this situation, I didn't see the play, but it looked like it just kind of, I don't think he got necessarily hit in an odd way. It just something didn't go right. So I don't know if it's more than normal, but it just seems like all these professional athletes or with all these sports we're just having, and some pretty good players too, with just like horrific injuries. I don't know if it's more than normal, but it seems like there's been maybe a few more this year.
Yeah, I think so too. And it is also just disturbing to see the reaction of the people who saw it, whether it's, you know, people in the crowd or other players. I didn't see this injury on Sunday in the football game, but I did see that the reaction to the Gordon Hayward injury. He was sitting right in front of the Cavaliers bench and his legs were in the air.
Yeah.
And all the Cavaliers players like literally got up, covered their faces with a towel, and started running down the tunnel that was next to their bench. Like, that's how disgusted they were. All the people in the stands had their hands on their head and their mouths were wide open. I mean, that's just an idea of how bad the injury was when you get that kind of reaction from literally everybody there.
Yeah, and the thing that's so strange about it in football or in basketball or any sport is that they keep playing the game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, they take the guy off the field and then somebody else comes in his position. And especially in football where, you know, you're going to have a lot of contact on the next play. So they just keep on keeping on with that. But anyway, really tough situation there. Hopefully that guy, Zach Miller, gets better, but gruesome situation. Here's an interesting report. This is out of North Korea. Their nuclear program has killed a few people, but it's people in their own country. North Korea's mountain nuclear site collapsed, killing at least 200. I guess it's hard to ever know how many. I don't know, you know, how accurate the reporting is coming out of North Korea, but they say the accident at the one of their sites, we'll put it that way. I don't even know how you begin to pronounce that. One of their test sites on October 10th occurred while people were doing construction on an underground tunnel, according to Japan's TV reporting, citing a source in North Korea. So it collapsed, killed at least 200. And so that's what happens in those nations, you know. They're doing all these nuclear testing and such, but there's accidents that occur. It seems like they don't seem to care for the people and the safety as much. And so anyway, could be quite a few more than that, but they're reporting 200 dead.
Did you say those were people in the tunnel actually constructing it?
Yep.
Yeah, it does seem like in nations like that, the infrastructure might be a little bit more shaky. And so if you do have an accident, things collapse easier, for example. And that's just a horrible way to go, to have a tunnel collapse on you, to be underground like that and then to die that way. But like you said, the regime doesn't really care. Those are pawns. Those are just faceless workers who can be replaced by anyone else they force to go down there.
Yeah, bad deal there in North Korea. This is a report here from the Daily News, New York Daily News. Probably not a surprising report, but interesting. They say depression rates are rising fast for young U.S. teens. There's a terrible story the other day that I heard sort of related to this. Really an odd situation. 22-year-old girl, lady, driving, and a 12-year-old, I don't know if it was a boy or a girl, I can't remember, but a 12-year-old was trying to commit suicide, which is insane. And they jumped and landed on her vehicle and killed her. And I don't know what happened to the 12-year-old. But can you, I mean, you're just driving down the road, minding your own business, and somebody lands on your roof.
Like on an overpass, they jumped off the overpass.
Something, yeah, they jumped off of something, landed on the car, and killed her. So anyway, and you said the other day you were talking about like the transgender stuff. Like there's a 40% rate of suicide there.
Yeah,
depression,
it's over 40%.
And that's a lot. Well, I don't know what the age group is for that, but I would think a lot of it's young people there as well.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of the young people, like we talked about yesterday, even being empowered to make that choice without the knowledge of their parents. And their parents know better. I mean, there is an agenda being pushed nationally. Those doctors don't care quite as much about the child's well-being as the parents would. And here they are being allowed to make these destructive decisions on their own. And even if they're not transgender, a lot of these teens, you know that they're not going to, you know, discuss it with their parents and see if they can be walked back from the edge. A lot of the time when you have that idea pop in your head, you've already come so far that you don't necessarily want to be talked out of it, it seems like. And I think we've even talked about before how technology has a big role to play in this now. It's not like you get bullied at school all day and then you go home and you have a break from it until the next day. There's the screen addiction aspect to it where even when they're not at school, they're constantly connected online to the people they see in person. And the addiction, I guess, must be so strong that even if they're getting bullied online, they can't turn off the device. That's what I've always wondered about too. Your life is being destroyed by these people, but you can't put the phone away. It's kind of hard to relate to that.
Yeah, it's a different time for young people today. And when they talk about depression rates rising here for the young U.S. teens, they're talking about, you know, crippling depression, not just the kind of a bummer of a day, as everybody would have from time to time. But this is the type where it gets really serious. They say it's enough to give you the blues. Depression is on the rise in the U.S., and young teens are most susceptible. That's the eye-opening finding of a new Columbia University study, said to be the first to identify trends in depression by gender, income, and education. Researchers analyzed depression rates of Americans age 12 and up over a 10-year period ending in 2015. In general, the rates rose from 6.6% to 7.3%. The rise among those ages 12 to 17 increased from 8.7% to 12.7%. So nationally, it's on the rise a little bit, but it's on the rise the most in that 12 to 17 age group. So that can be a time of change in a person's life anyway, and maybe a little more emotional in some ways. But then if you start to throw in all the different things, like you talked about the social media aspect of life, the breakdown of the family, all of these things that people are facing now, questions over gender identities, things that you don't, you know, you shouldn't think about ever, but particularly at the ages of 12 to 17, that's a mix for a really bad mind frame. And I think these young people are falling into that.
Absolutely. And I would even be interested to see the split between those who attend public school versus those who either go to a private school or maybe they're homeschooled. I'm sure that the public school environment would lead to even more depression than those other two as well, because it is barbaric. I mean, some of the stuff that I saw in public school a decade ago, I mean, it's so shocking and disgusting that you could never repeat it to someone. And yet I've only heard of stories where the trends are far worse today, just the depravity and just the savage way that these young people are dealing with each other.
Yeah, and there's the thing about this study, too, is they don't give any reason because they don't know the reason. So all they can do is look at the numbers and say, yes, people are more depressed, and young people especially, but they don't give the reasons. And the reason, you know, it could come in a variety of ways, but it does get back to breaking of God's law. It always does, whether by the individual or by the situation they're in, you know. It always comes back to that, and but they can't touch that topic. So they're kind of left looking at these numbers and talking about mental health and so forth. But if you don't talk about the cause, which is always, always a breaking of God's law, you can't find the solution to it.
And it would seem like specifically, as you mentioned, the breakdown of the family would be a huge part of that as well. Because if you think about it, no matter how much you might be bullied at school or you might have some issues that you're dealing with, if you have a strong father figure at home and a loving, caring mother to go home to every day as a young person, you're going to be encouraged and strengthened by that. And you're going to at least have a foundation in your life where you know you can rely on these people who love you and who've raised you your entire life. If that's not there at home, you don't have that support structure and you don't have that loving advice on how to deal with these problems. A lot of these young people are trying to do it their own way, based on who knows what influences from media or entertainment or from their peers at school. They're going to make the wrong decisions. You have to have that family influence, and a lot of these kids don't. And so they have nowhere to turn when the depression gets really bad.
There's a story we're going to talk about towards the end of the program today that where the nuclear family, as they call it, is really under attack, particularly the white nuclear family. That's being blamed as the cause of problems, when in fact, the racial issue is, that's another story, but I mean, just a proper godly family, I don't care what the race is, that's the solution to problems. That's the solution, but they're trying to make it out like that is the cause. And then lo and behold, well, look at that. More teens are depressed or can't figure it out. Yeah, I think the answer is pretty obvious if people are willing to look at it, but this is amazing. So that's a new report that's out. Depression rates rising fast for young U.S. teens. Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. As we mentioned yesterday, it has a new look to it and an update. It looks great. Check it out. Top story today, why Catholics and Protestants commemorate the Reformation together. That's this day in history. We're going to talk a little bit about that. That's top story at thetrumpet.com. Also, some really important stories for today. Should you observe Halloween? Another one related to that, millennials are becoming witches. It doesn't seem like that should be a title, but that's the truth. It's not funny, but it's just not a title you read every day.
Yeah, and that goes in line with the trend of people being less religious but more spiritual. If you're not religious but you are spiritual, it means that you're still trying to connect with the spirit realm in some way. It's just not the good spirit realm. There's the good and the evil in that realm, and there are just so many ways to open up your mind and let demons influence it, basically.
Yeah, it's funny how a lot of people will run out and kind of do whatever they do on Halloween, but then if you talk about Satan and the demons in a realistic way, the people think that's kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Well, what are you running around doing? Anyway, another story related to that, witchcraft, America's neo-pagan movement. There's a story today, actually, from the College Fix related to this. More students, young Americans turn to paganism. You know, you hear the word pagan or witches, you think automatically, like, that's bad, but some people don't think so. They actually want to get into it.
Yeah, and those articles do expose how if you're talking about anything that is non-religious but still spiritual or anything that is described as pagan, that is overt, blatant Satan and demon worship. That's what that is. That's the truth of the matter. It's presented as harmless in TV shows and movies where you have these different groups maybe going off in the woods, lighting a fire, doing their chant. It's their own thing. It's their own little group gathering. It's just a little bit of fun getting in tune with nature or whatever they want to describe it as. And yet it's extremely dangerous. And that's why law enforcement officials are aware of these types of groups. A lot of these groups involve abuse of children. They meet without any clothes on, so obviously there's going to be some problems there as well. Even there's been problems with sacrificing human beings, so that's obviously not just a little bit of harmless fun. There are some serious aspects to that that everyone needs to be aware of and make sure to avoid.
Yeah, it's taken off on college campuses. It's this write up here from the College Fix says, as millennials continue to leave traditional Christian religions, interest in Wiccan and pagan practices have seen increased interest in recent years, a trend also spotted among young people and on college campuses. Pagan and or Wiccan student groups are present on a number of college campuses, both secular and religious, across the nation. The growing normalization of such practices, albeit still a minority, corresponds with the decline in Christian believers, some observers note. A recent report in MarketWatch headlined, "Why Millennials Are Ditching Religion for Witchcraft and Astrology," argues as much. For example, they say, whether it be spell casting, tarot astrology, meditation and trance, or herbalism, these traditions offer tangible ways for people to enact change in their lives, they say. According to this one lady, she's the owner of a Brooklyn-based metaphysical boutique. I don't even know what that is, which has seen a big increase in 20-something customers in recent years. The article also cites recent Pew Research Center data that found 25% of Americans now identify with no religion, but they are spiritual on some level, I guess. So they're into all kinds of different spiritual activities, but not traditional Christianity. And so there is this interest in paganism that is alive and well on college campuses, even ones that are considered to be religious schools.
Yeah, and that woman quoted there was talking about how in these uncertain times, and with the economy the way it is, and with a lot of different political disputes and social issues at the forefront of our consciousness every day, people are looking for some sort of a solution. They're looking for a way to, like she said, change their lives. And that's the thing. It will change your life. It's just not a change that you want to undergo. to have demons taking control, that's not anything close to the change that they're probably looking for.
No, it gets very dark for them. Some examples in some of the college campuses, they say in 2010, well, actually, let me back up. It says, today a number of universities around the country have officially recognized pagan or Wicca student groups, usually housed under their representative religious student activities departments. So they're actual departments at some colleges. Wow. In 2010, Syracuse University appointed its first pagan chaplain of Hendricks Chapel, an interdenominational place of worship. Others, like Air Force, have followed suit, including designating specific areas on campus for pagan or spiritual worship. In 2014, Loyola University Chicago, that's a Catholic institution, christened a new pagan student club. Also that year, the University of Washington student newspaper launched a column dedicated to delving into Wiccanism. So there you go, off to college. And that's what you're facing.
Well, you notice Air Force and Loyola, that's a military institution, then there's a religious institution. Think about that. We have people in our military who are witches or Wiccans, open pagans. God obviously isn't going to bless our military endeavors if we have overt, you know, Satan worshipers in our military. And then Loyola with the Catholics, there's, I think it was the one about millennials becoming witches. That article brings out how ineffective our religion is now, where the idea is that you can come as you are to whatever church you please. You never have to change. It doesn't really matter too much what is right or wrong because Christ died for our sins. So who are those people to then turn around and decisively say that witchcraft is wrong? So here you have a Catholic university allowing a pagan chapter because they don't really have much authority to tell anyone what's right and wrong, when pretty much every Christian denomination now just tells people they don't ever have to change.
Yeah, they. If you get away from the Bible as your foundation and you don't have any groundwork to say anything, really.
Yeah.
Why do we know that all this stuff is wrong? Well, the Bible says it very specifically and condemns it. And of course, if you look at Christ's life and his example, in most cases when he was dealing with problems, what did he do? He cast out demons.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he did when he was on this earth. So that's not something that people, I don't know, maybe think about that much, but it's very much in the Bible there. So there's a lot of problems with that, and it's good to take a look at, especially today, because there's going to be a lot of running around and doing of those activities, but it's not fun and games. They say a lot of it, actually, too, can be tied to this article, anyway, that I was looking at here from the College Fix, says that a lot of it gets tied back to the sort of the environmentalists. Like, it's not that sort of thinking is kind of tied in as well, because they're sort of worshiping nature and not God.
Yeah, and the Bible specifically says that people would worship the creation rather than the creator. It's just a way of pagan worship specifically condemned in the Bible, and yet people are just, it does seem like, enamored with the creation. That's a good thing as long as you don't put it ahead of God himself, because if the creation is beautiful and marvelous, how much greater is the God who created that?
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's sort of a misconception that either a person would be an environmentalist or they just want to dump sludge in the river. You know, it's not one or the other. I think, you know, nobody wants to see the pollution, I would think. But there's a difference between that and going out and worshiping it, mm-hmm. like you mentioned. So,
and like we've talked about, it gets pretty extreme. I mean, when all you're trying to do is open up your mind to the spirits of the universe, the angels aren't coming in. I mean, it's going to be the demons. The bad spirits are going to be taking advantage of that opportunity. You know, you talk about the common conception of meditation is that you just empty your mind, you think about nothing. An empty mind is just a fertile ground for the demons to take advantage of.
Yeah. There's a lot of great write-ups here at thetrumpet.com today about that subject, about what's going on with the turning away from religion in a lot of cases, and turning in some cases to these pagan practices. Make sure you stop and check out the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, too, coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Archives are at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com, the new and updated trumpet.com. Some headlines today that are looked at, also talking about education, which is very important. And your host, Mr. Stephen Fleury, references a study, recent study, I think we may have touched on it a few months ago, but about how people were asked to name, you know, some of the worst leaders in history, and like the great genocides and so forth. And Hitler was at the top, which you would expect, but they didn't list any of the communist leaders until way, way at the end. Mm. Like I think they even had some U.S. presidents in there. Of course, they had Saddam Hussein, who was a bad character and did a lot of bad things, but not on the scale of some of the Russian leaders like Stalin and such. And he wasn't even there until way at the end. So it just shows, he was pointing out that the communist teaching really is infiltrating the education in the United States, and we see that everywhere. Getting rid of God, getting rid of religion, trying to destroy the family, trying to get rid of the history of the United States. And what are you left with? You're left with this sort of communist thinking, and that's where it's coming from, is through these educational institutions and people not knowing history.
Well, that's exactly the problem, isn't it? That these kids are not being taught the dangers of communism, because communism has infiltrated the educational system that is teaching them. So, of course, instead of understanding that these communist leaders have a body count that doesn't compare to anyone else. I mean, even Hitler, he killed 6 million Jews. I guess if you wanted to attribute the entire war to him, I guess you could say 80 million people died in the war. But at the same time, communists directly killed tens of million of millions of their own people, even outside of war. They just did that in regular times because they wanted to keep hold on power. It just doesn't compare. But what you're seeing in a lot of these universities is that these same leaders who massacre their own people and who cause immense suffering even outside of all those deaths are being glorified. These educational institutions, these teachers, they think fondly on people like Stalin and Mao Zedong, and there's no reason to. There's no way to justify it except for that it's sort of a utopian ideal. It sounds nice on the surface to have everyone be equal, to have everyone supported by a supposedly loving government. But what they fail to acknowledge is that every single time you try to put communism into practice, it fails miserably. They just can't acknowledge that part. They like the idea, but they've yet to find a good example of it being put into practice.
Yeah, it hasn't worked ever. It's been a horrible disaster. I was going to save this article to the end because it tied in, but it ties in now too, and so we'll get into it now. But this is from Fox News. Speaking of the educational system, university professors, and the fact that they're just blatantly communist in a lot of cases. Check this out. This is, having white nuclear family promotes white supremacy, says New York professor. So if you send your young person to school, or if you go to school, And you get this professor, here's what she's going to be teaching you. And this is some of, she tweeted this, so it was out there, and then, of course, locked her account after she got some flack. But so she tweeted this. She says, I mean, if you're a white person who says they're engaged in dismantling white supremacy, but you're forming a white family and reproducing white children that you, quote, want the best for, how is that helping and not part of the problem? Have you ever heard anything more communist than that? Get rid of the family. If you marry somebody within your own race and you have children and you want the best for them, you're part of the problem? Where, that is an outrage. That lady, well, she shouldn't be employed as a professor, I don't think. Well, that's straight out of the mind of the devil. Who would ever say something like that and think that that's makes any sense at all?
Well, she's openly advocating for the destruction of the white race and at the hands of white people themselves. She's expecting white people to undermine the one institution that has throughout history helped people of all races. I don't even know why she has to focus on race. The focus on race in so many of these cases is completely superfluous. If a family is a good thing, why would you want any specific race to dismantle that family institution? Why wouldn't you just want every other race outside of the white race to build great families as well? Why can't races peacefully coexist, learn from each other's strengths and from each other's weaknesses, and coexist? What you're seeing here is that some of these leftist communist professors don't want true equality. They talk about equality, they talk about tolerance, they talk about success for all people, and yet when you really get to the heart of their views, no, they want supremacy for their little group. So whatever their gender or their race preference is, they want their group to rule, and they want the destruction of everybody else. That's not an ideology that anyone can coexist with. You can't have people like that teaching the next generation and expect the nation to be able to stand for much longer.
She wasn't done. She continued and said,
oh boy.
Until white people are ready to confront their own family's racism and participation in systematic white supremacy, it's not getting dismantled. Beyond just calling out interpersonal racism, white people who want to be engaged in the work need to ask themselves about housing wealth. Now, hang on here. She said, white people, do you own your home? When you die, where's wealth in that house going? If it's to your children, you're reproducing inequality. Really? Because the Bible says a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Mm. She knows better than that? That's communism. Get rid of the no personal wealth, no family building together. Get rid of it all. Give it to the state. They'll figure it out. That's like communism 101. No one has any personal wealth. No one has any personal property. And they're teaching that and tweeting that from a university in New York City.
And on top of that, she is making demands that she knows, logically, no one will ever comply with. All white people are not going to choose to dismantle the nuclear family from their entire race. That's just not going to happen. They're not going to choose to give their homes away to a random minority family they've never met. It's just not going to happen. So what is the outcome when the communist demands are not met? Do they just keep making demands for the rest of time and then continually get ignored? Or do they advance it to violence and civil war and burning cities? You know, there is a violent end game to this, because clearly no one is going to actually peacefully comply with these types of demands.
Everybody that works hard and produces for the family should be able to pass it on to their family. That's a biblical principle. It has nothing to do with race. Every family should do that. Hopefully every family could. It's unfortunate that it doesn't always happen. But, yeah, that's just an outrageous comments being made. But they're being thrown out there more and more. And at the end of the day, you know, where do they come from? They come from Satan the devil. Because all of their teaching is anti-Bible, it's anti-God, it's anti-God's plan. God's plan is to reproduce a family, and they're saying, I get rid of family, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Well, who thinks that? Well, Satan thinks that.
Exactly. And there is even a misconception about the term privilege today, to say that white privilege or black privilege or, you know, male privilege, whatever you want to say, is a bad thing. What privilege really implies, especially when we're talking about families, is that your parents were successful and they wanted to pass it along to the children they raised and love very much. And if you have a successful family line, that's something to be proud of. It's not something to be ashamed of and then, you know, willingly try to turn that privilege over to random people. Privilege is not a bad thing at all. And then, like you say, with the way that they talk about dismantling family, that is just a totally satanic idea. And especially when the Bible talks about people of all races having the potential to be God beings, there are not going to be any races among the spirit God beings in the future. I mean, obviously, race is just a trivial thing that people get hung up on today. And yet, long term, we should be able to see past race because our future is not tied up with any specific, skin color.
Yeah, the teaching is getting more and more outrageous. And I don't, I wonder what will happen even to this person. Probably nothing. I don't know. But that's being taught. And if that's what's being put out publicly, what's being said privately in classrooms? And you have a whole generation coming out of people that are, if nothing else, listening to it, even if they don't agree 100%. I believe she's a sociology professor. When I was in college, 1990, probably eight, somewhere in there, I had a sociology class, and that's when they first started teaching. At least I first heard about you could be whatever gender you wanted. And that was sort of like, well, this is sort of a taboo subject, but we'll kind of throw it out there a little bit. Fast forward to today, and they're pushing it at everybody.
That's part of communism, too. You slowly broach the subject to, obviously, much resistance at first. But then, of course, over time, the more you get familiar with the subject, in this case, rampant immorality, undermining even the gender roles, people get familiar with it. They get used to it. They wear down in their resistance against it. And all of a sudden, what you see is just a mass push. Once it has become familiar as an idea and enough people have heard about it for a long enough time and they haven't shut it down at the very start, then there's room for a huge push for it to gain acceptance. You see that all the time. And it's disappointing that we're not aware enough to shut these ideas down at the start instead of, there's nothing wrong with people sharing ideas, but if it's a bad idea, you can say it's a bad idea. That's not trampling on free speech to prevent ideas like this from gaining acceptance.
Yeah, they're very much trying to destroy those two pillars that America was founded on, which was religion and morality, which we'll talk about in a minute here. Today is October 31st. Here are some things that happened on this day in history. 1517, Martin Luther posted the 95 Theses on the door of the Wittenberg Palace Church. The event marked the start of the Protestant Reformation in Germany. So there's a write-up about that on thetrumpet.com today. And then in 1999, leaders from the Roman Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church signed the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification. The event ended a centuries-old doctrinal dispute over the nature of faith and salvation. So they got that all solved. 1922, on this day, Benito Mussolini became Prime Minister of Italy. Not a good individual. 1941, Mount Rushmore was declared complete after 14 years of work. At the time, the 60-foot busts of U.S. President George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln were finished. You can find plenty of articles today saying we should blow that thing up because, well, you know how it is. They can't have those statues around anymore.
And, of course, it's also on Native American land. It was land stolen from the Native peoples. And only America is forced to give back land won in war. That is the reality. If the Indians had won, no one would be demanding that they give back the land that they conquered. I mean, that just does not happen unless you're talking about the Anglo-Saxons, the white people, America, Britain. People make demands on these groups because apparently we're receptive to responding to those demands when we shouldn't be.
I saw one article where this guy was talking about blowing up the monuments, of course, or Mount Rushmore. And he said, yeah, who should we replace those dudes with? That was his exact what he wrote. And I thought, wow,
So disrespectful.
Talk about disrespect. I mean,
he's done nothing.
He's some young guy, yeah. You know, just kind of writing his little blog. You know, he's going to refer to these great men of history as dudes.
Seems like the implication there is that they would have to all be women, probably of all different colors, because you just have to always play the identity politics game.
I don't know. That's the time we're living in. But it was talked about. It was prophesied that would happen in the Bible, and of course, explained very well in this booklet, "Character in Crisis," that we would be more and more divided. And we're going to talk a little bit about this book. It's a free booklet at thetrumpet.com, and you can get it there. It's not too long of a read, but just packed with great information. And like we mentioned yesterday, it's a little over a decade old, I guess. And you read it, and what was being forecast would happen, and then look at where we are today. And you see that we're right there. As the booklet points out, two pillars that America was founded on, religion and morality, those are being attacked today just hugely. It says, consider the changes in America over the past 200 years. And this then gets into the President Clinton administration. President Clinton received the highest approval ratings while in the midst of numerous White House scandals. This is what should disturb us and even frighten us most of all. That would not have been the response of Americans even 20 years ago. I think people look back at the Clinton administration kind of like the good old days in some ways, even though it was full of scandal and all kinds of problems. And it's gotten just worse. We've gotten worse as a nation since then. But even when people kind of look at some of what happened there, I think it's kind of looked at like a little bit of a joke, you know, kind of a laugh, like, you know how it is. And of course, you remember all those scandals with Monica Lewinsky and such.
Yeah, and it almost seemed like there was a coordinated effort on behalf of all the late-night comedy shows at that time to also make as many jokes about it as possible, not to humiliate the president, but to sort of excuse the behavior. It was more to say that these are kind of just silly actions. They're not anything to be taken seriously. In fact, there's something that we can make plenty of jokes about, and that was the mindset throughout that entire time with all those sex scandals. And by the way, a lot of that wasn't even consensual either. I mean, that's not even just promiscuity. That's getting to sexual assault and rape, which if you would hear it today, you would think that that's what people take most seriously when talking about allegations against President Trump. All of a sudden, it's not a Democrat anymore, and they're taking it totally seriously. So you just see a sickening double standard there, and at the same time you have all this filth coming out about Hollywood that people are also ignoring, because again, they happen to be very far to the left, and so the media protects its own.
There's a late night talk show host that's going to be hosting I think it's the Oscars or something, and he said that he wasn't going to make too many jokes about what's going on in Hollywood because it's not a laughing matter, which he's right, it's not a laughing matter, but the reality is they're probably not going to talk about it because it's themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's why they don't want to, you know, get into it. So it's, but again, it's so interesting. Look at where we are now and all the stuff happening even today in your news. And then you go back to what was talked about in Character in Crisis, you know, what was going on at the White House at that time. People kind of thought, well, you know, that's people's private business. It's got nothing to do with anything else. But the founding fathers said, look, it's your private morality. If you don't have private morality, the nation can't work. It's going to fall apart. Fast forward to today, and were the founding fathers right? Is what was written in Character in Crisis right? Is what the Bible said right? Of course it is. We can see that it's happening.
Exactly. And we know for a fact that we shouldn't be joking about immorality. We shouldn't be covering it up. And when we expose it, it shouldn't be merely for political gain. Those are the things that we're seeing. Where it's just not taken seriously enough because so many people don't even believe God exists anymore, or they don't think he is an active God that has authority in our lives. And when you think that, well, who is really in charge? If God's not in charge, human beings are in charge. That's what it gets down to. And you can do whatever you want. You can decide whatever is right or whatever is wrong if you, as a human being, are the ultimate authority. And look what that has gotten us. The nation is sliding, declining so rapidly because we have now appointed ourselves God.
Yeah, the Character in Crisis points out here, a White House scandal is not just about the White House. It's about America and Americans. It's about all of us. And it says it's about you. And that's the reason that not a lot is said about what happened there all those years ago in that administration, or not a lot is said about some of what's happening. I know it's in the headlines, but the more they get into it, the more they find that everybody's guilty. And that's the thing, even with the general populace. I mean, it's easy for the American people to sit back and, you know, point the finger at Hollywood and say, well, they're terrible, and it is. But what about the individual lives of the population, too? Are the same sort of things happening? And that's why, you know, again, people are getting away, I'm sure, from any sort of religion, any sort of law. And that's what it comes down to, is if there's a law that says you should do this and you shouldn't do that, people are backing away from that because they don't want to be told. They want to keep living their own life.
Yes, and we do see a lot of hypocrisy. It's hard to point the finger and judge Bill Clinton when, for example, 50,000 people in the Oklahoma City area are signed up on AshleyMadison.com, which is a website that helps you commit adultery against your spouse. So when we see our leader having affairs, committing adultery, sinning, breaking the Ten Commandments, it's not a lot that people could say about it when it's such common practice in society in general. In fact, the only reason that immoral leaders could ever get elected is because the people voted for them. And if we cared more about morality in our leaders, obviously we would have different leaders than we do.
Yeah. Character in Crisis booklet points this out. It says the Americans' people response to, you know, that administration, what went on there, is a frightening portent of our nation's future. And that's proving to be true. It says if we fail to understand, that doesn't make the bad news go away. America, it says, may not care about the morality of its leaders, but what does God think? Does he really care? The answer to that question is the most disturbing of all. And then Jeremiah 23:20 is quoted, where it says, the anger of the Eternal shall not return until he have executed, until he have performed the thoughts of his heart. It says, in the latter days you shall consider it perfectly, which should read, understand it thoroughly. So when the law is broken, there's a penalty for that. Whether, you know, say people would want to ignore that or not, you can only ignore it for so long. And we see, even if it's not to the point, say, of God himself or Christ directly intervening, how about the statistics, just the fruits of what's being done? 1 in 3 Americans have STDs. Those are the numbers, 1 in 3. So where does that end up in 20 years? This is a fruit of what's been happening.
Yeah, exactly. Again, how could we say anything about our leaders when that is the type of behavior that a third of the country, more than that, really is engaged in? I mean, I don't think every single person who is promiscuous gets a sexually transmitted disease right away, or maybe they don't all have them at the same time. And so you would probably have to say that more like half the country is involved in that type of behavior. That's how commonplace it is. And even outside of that, pornography is a bigger business than all the four major sports in this country combined. It just goes to show you, even if people are not going out and seeking out multiple partners in that way, it's online and people are susceptible to that as well. And it's huge business because people don't even think it's wrong anymore. You see that every time a poll comes out that they don't think that pornography is wrong. They don't think that horror movies or violent video games are wrong. Every type of filthy entertainment, it's like we just gorge on it.
Mm-hmm. And back in 1998, in February 3rd, 1998, there was a write-up in the New York Times about just the way people thought about, say, even the leadership in the country at the time. And it was a post to some college students at here in Oklahoma, actually. And they were asked about the scandal, and almost all the students said they believed that President Clinton was lying. And they tended to respond in this way: all politicians are crooks. Very few of them tell the truth. Few of them are faithful to their spouses. So why not have one who's smart and knows how to get things done? Mm-hmm. And that is almost the exact quote. And the attitude is, they say, we really don't respect the leader, but what do you expect from a politician? And so then, as the article went on to say, that's a very disturbing trend, because in times of crisis, there has to be a certain level of trust between the people and the leader.
But if everyone just thinks, well, of course the guy's a liar, or, you know, or she's a liar, or they do this or they do that, you're not going to have any trust in time of crisis. You know, what if we got hit with a crisis in the U.S., like a major one of some kind? There's so much division, so much hatred towards the current leader among some groups. What would we do? Would we come together, or would we fight each other? I mean, what would we do?
Yeah, we are in a lot of trouble anytime a crisis comes around now, because even when it seems like our response to a disaster like Hurricane Harvey or Hurricane Irma, it seems like our response is a good one, we have so much squabbling over what shoes the First Lady was wearing when she went to the scene of the disaster in Houston. I mean, it's just never-ending bickering, and it's backed up by just so much hatred. I mean, it's not just bickering. It's that people hate each other, and they would get rid of each other if they could. Obviously, we're in a pretty bad situation now, and it's almost like we've been forced to have our expectations of our leaders lowered, because any of the debates, did we ever hear a question about private morality or the importance of the Bible and God in our society? Was there anything about that? You couldn't say much about most of those candidates when it came to private morality or religion. I mean, it's just, those are just areas where our leaders have nothing. And so at that point, if they have none of those things, then we have to just say, well, does he at least make common sense decisions? And, well, thankfully he does, because there are so many people who wouldn't even do that.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's even like, say, what is a conservative even in the United States these days? I've heard it say, well, fiscally conservative.
Socially liberal, yeah.
Yeah, which you do privately, it's your own business. And so it is just very interesting to see where it's all come. And yeah, that's a great question you posed there. I mean, yeah, can you imagine the debate, somebody raising that question? What do you think about, you know, private morality? You know, you'd hear a pin drop in there, because yeah. Who's going to say anything? Whether it be the candidate, whether it be the person asking the question, whether it be people in the audience, who's going to say anything? Take a stand for it one way or the other. You're just probably not going to see that happen, because this is the way that a lot of the people live. So that's what happens. You get the leader the leaders that you want, and they're a reflection of society.
Exactly. And even when you do hear people complaining about Mr. Trump or Mrs. Clinton, you know, it's like, oh, well, Mrs. Clinton won't stop complaining about her election loss, or, you know, Mr. Trump doesn't have empathy, whatever it is. They don't even get to the heart of, like, the fact that maybe our leaders just don't have morality. That's not even discussed. I mean, I think there's a lot of times where you want to avoid exposing people's personal lives, but at the same time, that does have to be considered before you elect a leader.
Well, not only do they avoid it, if somebody were to run for an office and they actually did hold to some sort of, you know, morals, biblical morals, they wouldn't make it.
Yeah.
Because people would point the finger at them and say, well, you don't support this cause, that cause, and the other cause. And they would know it, and they'd grill them on it. Do you support such and such? They'd have to say, well, no, I don't. And they'd say, well, why do you hate people?
Right.
And they say, well, you know, the Bible says you shouldn't do that. You know. And
well,
they wouldn't get out of the first runoff.
Yeah, you saw that with Judge Roy Moore. He won among the Republicans in Alabama, but I don't know if he's going to win in general. Maybe in that state. That might be the only state where he could win a Senate seat, because he is anti-homosexuality. Right? I mean, there are beliefs that he has where he is going to be constantly smeared as a bigot, despite the fact that you have professors, like we talked about, who openly advocate for the destruction of the white race. That's not bigotry, but saying that the biblical definition of marriage should stand, that is hateful. That is beyond the pale. That's something we can't tolerate in society. When that is the way that we judge our leaders, you know that something's seriously wrong.
Yeah, there's a really good sidebar in this book of Character in Crisis on the family breakdown, and it really speaks to your point there. And it quotes John Adams as saying, the foundation of national morality must be laid in private families. Private families. And then it says, if the families are not moral, how can the nation be moral?
Our forefathers laid the foundation of a great nation. They built America with God's blessings. Today, we are destroying America and bringing God's curses upon ourselves. You don't have to look too far beyond just the family breakdown to see that's the truth. John Adams. I'm going to take John Adams' wisdom, which is biblically based, over this professor that says you should destroy families and give your houses away to somebody.
Or that blogger who called the guys on Mount Rushmore dudes.
Yeah, I'll go with President Adams there. Foundation of national morality must be laid in private families. He couldn't win today. He couldn't win. None of the founding fathers could win the presidency of the United States today.
Exactly. And that even remains true among those who are constantly talking about the virtues of these men. I mean, you talk about some media members self-righteously asking why we couldn't have another Abraham Lincoln, and yet those same people asking that question wouldn't even vote for him.
No.
I mean, it's so hypocritical. We're so blind to how far we've fallen morally that we don't even realize that those leaders, like you said, would never have a chance.
Yeah, we're falling off the edge of the abyss, and it's pretty serious. You need to really get this book, Character in Crisis. It's not that long of a booklet. It's a pretty quick read, but boy, it gets into a lot of great points here about the two pillars that America is founded on, religion and morality. Take a look, see if you think they're those pillars are standing today or not. And then look and see what the Bible says happens when they fall. It's not a good picture, but it's not all bad news. There is hope that it will get turned around eventually, but it's going to take a lot to get there. So make sure you get that booklet's great. And one of the things that's just so great about it, like we mentioned, is that it was written about a decade or so ago, and you can see how the trend has been spot on to what was predicted there. You can keep following that trail, and you know where it's going to end.
Yeah, the booklet's actually more relevant today than it ever has been. That's the powerful part about it.
Yeah, tremendous. So get it. It's for free, and it's at thetrumpet.com. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, coming up as well. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.